Welcome to From Trauma to True Love, the podcast where we break the cycle of painful relationships and build deep, lasting love you can trust. I'm Layla Reyes, a relationship coach, speaker, and author of Freedom from Shame, Trauma, Forgiveness, and Healing from Sexual Abuse. I'm here to help you release the invisible wounds from your past that may be holding you back from the love you truly desire. In each episode, we'll uncover the hidden patterns shaped by early childhood trauma, explore how they impact your relationships today, and guide you toward creating the partnership you were born to have. Whether you're looking to attract the one, deepen an existing connection, or finally feel safe in love, this is a space to discover what's possible. Let's dive into your journey from trauma to love. Welcome, everyone. Layla Reyes here, and I'm dedicating each of our episodes of this podcast to the continuing exploration of a topic that remains veiled in silence and stigma, childhood sexual abuse. So imagine living with a secret so deep that it shapes every corner of your existence. And now imagine the day you decide that that secret will no longer define you. That moment of courage changes everything. But it's just the beginning. Today, we're going to talk about denial and the journey towards freedom. Denial is a protective defense against trauma and keeps us from remembering things that are just too difficult to be with. So while denial works to protect us on one level, it can also be a barrier getting in the way of living your best life. So our topic today is denial. And with us today is Kim O'Hara, the author of the book, No Longer Denying Sexual Abuse, Making the Choices That Can Change Your Life. Kim is the creator of a free online teaching series called No Longer Abused, featuring women authors speaking on abuse. She's a prolific writer and book coach. She's guided over 40 thought leaders and CEO clients to write and publish their own books, which have been featured as the Today Show Motivational Book of the Month. Woo-hoo! Yay! On the Kelly Clarkson Show, number 3 Wall Street Journal Business Books, and number 1 in Barnes & Noble Nonfiction. So welcome, Kim. I'm so happy to be here with you today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor to talk about a topic that I'm obviously so passionate about. I wrote a whole book about it.
Yes, I have that book here. Yes, and it's wonderful to be here with you today. And I did pick up your book. You know,
Thank you.
I'm like, oh my God, I got to read this book. I haven't finished it yet, but I'm really inspired by your personal stories. You share so much of yourself in this book. You really reveal your own humanity and your own journey. And what another thing that I really am inspired with are the questions at the end of each chapter, and that, you know, really helping people on their journey to engage with it, with, you know, their journey out of denial. And so I just want to thank you for writing this book. I can see how helpful it is for people.
Thank you. Those questions are all the questions that I had to figure out for myself, and it took me a really long time.
Yeah.
And I wanted to streamline the process for people. You don't have to take 10 years to ask yourself all those questions, right? It can be done in a much quicker schedule.
Right. Well, and I think that's part of what, you know, when someone who's gone before us can really light the way for someone who's a step, you know, that, you know, step on that journey and ready to engage with it. So in your book, No Longer Denying Sexual Abuse, it's a powerful testament to your journey. And so I'm just wondering if you can share a little bit about the turning point, what your turning point was for you in deciding to no longer live in denial about your abuse.
I didn't really, I mean, initially have much of a choice. I think if I had chosen, I would have stayed in denial and I wouldn't have this big, bold, beautiful, magical, incredible life I have today. So I'm grateful. Mm-hmm. I, you know, woke up from a dream And this takes us to that conversation that we were having, you know, before, you know, yesterday, deciding on, you know, how we were, this interview was going to go or this discussion was going to go. You know, basically my subconscious mind felt that it was time. It was time. I was at a breaking point in a lot of other areas of my life. I had a marriage ending. I was looking at addiction. I was staring addiction in the face. I was becoming a single parent. I was at a career crossroads. So I think it was, you know, it's almost like the body was like, and let's add this to the mix. So it was a dream that I had that was so subtle, but something that I could not deny. And that's the best way I could describe it. Is that it was undeniable of the truth. And I knew it in that like millisecond in which I woke, and it took all the air out of my body. And I went, oh my God, I was abused. And that moment is so profound and so immediate. And you almost can't take in the magnitude of the journey you're about to go on. But in some way, you also know a door has opened that has never been opened before.
Right, right. And you know, what's a little bit different about my journey and our journeys is that I remembered, I mean, I was aware of the abuse the whole time, and you weren't. So that's, you know,
right.
That really, really speaks to a different type of denial, because for you, the denial was, you know, stuffed down in your body, right?
Yes.
Around that. And for me, it was more of a denial of the impact that the abuse had on my life. Like it was, oh, that didn't really matter. That really, you know, that really isn't impacting me. That doesn't affect my life, but it affected every single aspect of my life and every single relationship.
Right. Right. And that's when I started on, you know, unrolling all of that, you know, over the years, spirituality, romantic relationships, parenting, finances, you know, all the ways that we hold, you know, the shame in our bodies and all the ways that we lose that sort of masculine, feminine connection with ourselves, you know, the disassociation, the splitting, the leaving of self, you know, the wanting to absorb into oneself because it's so painful. And that's part of that denial. I do write in the book that a girlfriend of my dad, who was my abuser, did ask me about it when I was 20. She cornered me in a bathroom and everybody was drunk. That's in the book.
So I read that section in the book, and I was, you know, it just drew me in so raw, you know, that how you shared that story. Could you share that with people here so that they can kind of hear what happened with that?
Sure. You know, I was, you know, with my first husband, and we were partying with my dad at like a country club in where I'm from in Rhode Island. And he had a girlfriend at the time. So I must have been 25. And, you know, back then our parents were young, not like we are now, older parents. So he was all of maybe 40, 50, 47 or something. And she followed me into the bathroom and she said, your dad told me the other night when he was drunk that he had sexually abused you. Is that true? And I remember just being like, absolutely not. What are you talking about? And just like minimizing this woman as like just a drunken idiot. Yeah. And literally drove them home. They were both drunk, put my dad to bed. Never spoke of it again. I don't even think I told my husband at the time. I think I was just like, nope, not happening.
Right.
And I suppressed it.
Yeah. Like, and so there was like really nothing inside of you saying at that point, saying that you were abused. It was a complete denial, a complete rejection of that information.
The infathomability of the impact that that would have on the trajectory of my plan. See, that's part of this whole spiritual evolution, right? Of our own self-will and our own controlling plan that we then forge forward into the world, you know, as survivors that aren't looking at our truth. And then we run on a lot of self-will and we run on a lot of control. Because the fathomability of having to face something that painful, but yet on the other side of the pain is the freedom. Right.
Really, but you don't know that when you're in the middle of it, right? Because you're so, it's like being so up close to something that you can't really see anything except what's right there.
That's correct.
So how do you, then what would you say to somebody that might have an inkling? Like, say they're in denial, they don't really, but they have kind of like, I've had some of these hints dropped. What would you tell them to do to kind of engage with getting free of that denial?
Yeah, that's a really good question. If you know it's true, I'm sorry. If you know, if there's any inkling that, I used to say to an AA sponsor of mine, what happens if it's a lie? What happens if I made it all up? And I remember one day she went, "Oh, honey, nobody makes that up. That is not a popularity plus,
Right.
right?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah, right. It's
Right.
like that's not something you do to like be popular, right? It's kind of for a long time, I used the word like, oh God, it's really gross. I don't obviously talk that way anymore about it, but in the beginning it felt that way. So, just to kind of circle back, I would say that if anyone's mentioned anything to you or
Before you
anyone's
say that, before you give the advice here, it's like I just want to highlight one thing that you said, which is around questioning ourselves and our own integrity, our own, like when it we're like we're saying, oh no, it couldn't be there. We deny in so many different ways, but that's one way, questioning ourselves instead of, asking the question, well, if this were true, then what do I need to know, or what questions do I need to ask to go deeper? Right.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, it was very scary, the thinking process of. And this, really connects to the first question about what do people do when they have an inkling, is that, if you're having these thoughts, or if it's not something people generally make up. I mean, sure, there's the exceptions to the rule. I mean, but generally, if you feel that something happened to you,
Something happened.
something happened to you.
Right.
It's
Right.
like
Trust
this.
it. Right. Well, and that's part of, sexual abuse survivors. I know myself included in that is that, I would talk myself out of my body. You talked about dissociation and just like getting away from my body because it wasn't a safe place to be. I didn't want to feel what I was feeling, and just get away from it. So now you've done a lot of work. You have done a lot of work and a lot of healing. And so I'm wondering how, for me, what I've discovered, because for me, I healed, I did a lot of work with my father. So he stood up and really took responsibility and made amends. And so we did that journey together. And what I noticed in my own experience is that I could heal. Like, I feel like I'm healed from that experience, but healing doesn't mean that I don't have an impact on my life. It's still the those things still impact. I still have to be aware of certain things. And so I'm wondering what that's like for you, because I think you've also healed in your journey, but do you also notice an impact on your life? And if
Oh my
so,
gosh. Yes. I mean, so yes, I've done, and I write about this in the book. I've done all the stuff. I've done the somatic healing and I've done the talk therapy and I've done harmonium, which is like an energy shift, and I've worked with healers and shamans, and I've done all that kind of stuff, right? And writing the book was profoundly healing, and putting it out in the world was profoundly healing.
sure.
But what remains for me, that may never, I shouldn't say never, but at this time, I think that I'm just starting to give voice to it, which is part of the healing process. So maybe it will resolve it. And I do already see it resolving itself. It's something I work on, actually. I'm in a beautiful romantic relationship, and I, for the first time, have been able to voice this to him. It's terrifying when you have to do it, but that I will some way somehow be forgotten. that my value, no matter how much I actually believe I'm like valuable, that I will disappear when I'm not there in that person's mind. And I know in context that it's because I was visited, I was used, and then nobody spoke of it, like I didn't exist,
right.
and that relationship didn't exist. So of course it shows up when I have to trust in a romantic relationship, right?
Exactly.
So when I never was able to give voice to that and be honest and say, you know, I'm really going to be very vulnerable here. I actually, like, I'm afraid you're like going to forget me. Like, I'm like going to be forgotten. It took the power away from it, but I never trusted doing that in any of the relationships prior to that. So they were very short-lived and they were never deep. And those people probably weren't my people to do it with.
Right.
So finding someone that you are able to have that a relationship where you can speak your truth in a way that's so profoundly scary and have them say, I hear you, you know, it's like, I don't forget you when you leave. In fact, I think about you all the time. You know, you go, oh, wow, like that's wild. And then you start to build up your own strength. You're like, well, wait, why would I even be forgotten? I'm awesome. But if you try to say you're awesome before you believe you're awesome,
that's
not going to work.
Not true. I found that very, very true. So one of the things that I've been working with people on are a few of these things that you're talking about here. And, you know, the first one is that place, the vulnerability in saying that you're, you know, to admit, right? Because there's shame in going, oh, I'm afraid, I'm scared. And so we have to take the vulnerability and want shame cannot live with light shining down on it. So when you say, oh, I'm afraid, when you admit it, when you speak the words out loud, the shame starts to dissipate. And so there's this one piece, though, that I work with clients, and I'm curious how this might impact you and what you think about it. You know, the place where we're afraid as an adult, I don't want to be forgotten. But as a kid, we were forgotten, right? Somebody forgot you. Somebody didn't prioritize your needs, your care, your sacredness. And so then we grow up and we've forgotten ourselves. Like we leave ourselves behind. So when we make that commitment to ourselves to never, so all those things you're saying, you know, that he said to you, I think about you all the time. I don't forget you. That's what we say to ourselves, to that young part of, from the adult center. Oh, sweetheart, I will not ever forget you, darling. I'm here with you. You're with me all the time, right? And I think
absolutely.
You've been doing that. You've been being more and more with yourself. So here's the reflection of that showing up in this relationship.
Yes, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And I have a whole chapter on the inner child because I believe the inner child is, you know, your 8-year-old self, your 6-year-old self, your 4-year-old self, you know, and I've done work where you go back and look at the different ages and have them speak to you. And it's really profound what they have to say and how trapped they feel and how abandoned they feel and how dirty they feel and how nasty they feel. The things that they feel, these little children, these feral little children inside you. And you do need to let them know, you know, you're in charge and you're an adult and I'm a grown woman and I don't need a 5-year-old running running the show for me as a 54-year-old woman. That's like not a great combination. And so I've learned how to, you know, sit them down in a nice cozy corner and let them know that they're loved and they're taken care of and that they're safe. Mm-hmm. And then this reflection that I'm doing now as a 54-year-old woman is me finally being able to give voice in a way that's like an adult conversation that yes, has those pieces in it of those unnurtured parts of self from being little, but are also being spoken in a way that's not regressive, right? Like I'm not regressing. I'm not becoming childlike. I'm very like present in my 54-year-old body saying, this isn't rational. I know, but this plagues me. Can I tell you about this? Yeah. And you're right. I think that I wouldn't have been able to do that if I didn't actually believe that underneath all that, I'm going to be okay.
Exactly. And you know, what's so interesting about this conversation, this part of the conversation is that For a child, you know, I don't think the child even has the words, oh, I was abused. It's more, I'm bad, I'm wrong, I'm unworthy, I'm those kinds of senses in our body. So you've got the denial of the child there. But, you know, when you're grounded in and present, like you said, in your 54-year-old body, you can handle it. But the little kid can't. So I would say that, tell me if you agree with this. Idea here is that if you find yourself, so we'd say this to the people who are listening who are maybe in denial, but if you find yourself inside of that kind of belief system, then you know that your consciousness is being, you know, I'm unworthy, I'm not enough, I'm, you know, not loved, whatever that might be, then you're inside the consciousness of the child. And so that's a clue. Let it be a clue. And
Yes.
catch yourself, and then almost, I mean, I'll have clients sometimes actually take a step over, like step into the shoes of your 54-year-old body. And now what would you say from this place? And so, you know, it's a conscious kind of consistent coming back to that, you know. But my point is that you can tell by the way that it sounds, oh, I can handle it, I'm going to be okay. That's
Right,
adults,
right, right,
not going to be
right.
okay. That's the child self.
That's right. That's right. And I feel like that one thing that has happened in the last couple of years that's been really beautiful is that I've realized that I approach life in this sort of fearless childlike wonder that I don't think I was allowed to have as a child. I think I was very, you know, reading the room and seeing who was doing what and looking out for myself and being careful. And I didn't really understand what anybody, who anybody was or what it, you know, because when you're abused, like your perception of the world and how things work gets shifted really young, right? And so now you're almost forced to be in an adult state without adult tools or
Right.
adult communication, right? So, you know, I was just on a meeting this morning, a recovery meeting, and someone was sharing about like their friend being this dog. And I used to take off at any family gathering with this big, sloppy, happy, go lucky golden retriever. And I remember sitting with this golden retriever in sort of the rocky fields of Bristol, Rhode Island, with my arm around this golden retriever and going, you know, you're the only one that understands me. You're the only one that can feel me, right? And that's that like confusion about
Wow.
like the only
Yeah.
person that can relate to me as a child is a golden retriever at this point, right?
Right. Well, and then on the other side of it is the only person, the only person that the child part of you feels safe with is a golden retriever.
Right,
Right.
right,
So
right.
it's like, okay, this is who I feel safe with. This is who I can open my heart to and feel unconditional love from. This is who I in my body, I trust the intuitive sense of my body to know that this animal is here for me. This, you know, person animal is here for me to hold me and love
Right.
and isn't going to judge me or make me wrong. So you can whisper, if
Right.
anyone has a dog or a cat or a
That's
llama,
right.
you can whisper in their ear and
Or
just
a chinchilla, what a chinchilla, whatever, a
yeah.
pig, whatever people
Right,
have now.
okay, yep. Yeah, but you can tell maybe that's the first time that you come out of denial is to let your sweet darling golden retriever know what happened to you.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
true. It's true. Yeah.
Why do you think it takes people, you know, I mean, I'm guessing that you do think this, but it takes people a long time to understand their abuse, the effect on their lives. What can you?
Well, I mean, I go through, I always say in my book, chapters 1, 2, and 3 are the most important three chapters. It's sort of like when you're in a recovery program like AA, you know, you have to like, you know, come to terms with it and surrender it and look at the insanity of it. And so it's remembering, understanding your past and facing the abuse. Those are three very different, very distinct steps in coming out of denial. You know, just the remembering alone could take some people a very long time to just grapple with, and that's okay. And then understanding it. Okay, now that I remember it, now I really have to understand that this is a thing. It's going to be like, it's going to be part of my new identification, and then facing it, which comes with a whole milieu of emotions. You're pissed, you're hysterical, you're sad, you're depressed. And so then you start to go into what I start to talk about having a voice, and then you start to use that voice, and then you start to go into therapy, and then you can start looking at the areas of your life. But if you literally sit down 2 days after you realize you've been abused and you start to decide you're going to figure everything out in your life and make all your changes, it's not going to happen that way. It's too fast.
No, not at all. And actually, you know, when I think about it, the way that you're describing it, if I were to find out, like if I were to go, oh, I was abused, I think I would go into depression. I think I would, I would feel really, I'd be like, I'd be in shock or disbelief even. I mean, I'm just imagining what that, I had enough of that knowing what happened to me. I can imagine, right? So this is it. So what, did you experience anything like that when you found out? When you remembered, did you, what was that like? If you can describe like that, you know, that world that you were in the discovery of it.
Sure. Well, I'm very open that, and this was a long time ago. You know, I woke up from the dream when I was 42. So that was, you know, 12 years ago. At that time, I had gotten into a program called SLA, which is Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. And I'm not a sex or love addict in particular, but at the time it was a great place to be able to talk about like waking up to sexual abuse and starting to look at how it did affect my two marriages, because I didn't know I had been abused in those two marriages. And you know, wanting to have a better framework for going forward and having romantic relationships, but also it was to go back to what you've been talking about on this conversation, is to go back to finding self-love for self, right? But when I was
let me interrupt here, because that it's like in that moment, like you, or in the days following, would you recommend that people get help at that point, or talk to somebody, or sit with it by themselves, or write, or what advice would you give someone?
I'll tell you exactly what I did. Okay. When I woke up from the dream, I was home with two small children, 5 and 3. I literally didn't have a second to process what had happened. I mean, life was in session. The breakfast had to be made. The kids had to go to school, whatever the whole thing. But I did call my ex-husband. And that was a very short conversation, which I say in the book. And then I did call our marriage counselor, who obviously didn't work, but she referred me to a therapist. So the first thing I knew to do was to get a therapist. I got a therapist almost immediately. Because I was like, this is not going to happen alone.
You should not
go through anything like this alone.
You know, when I confronted my father before I had children, before I got married, it's like, oh, okay, now I'm, you know, now that I'm getting married, all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I've got kids that I didn't have. They were just thoughts in my mind at the time. That's where I went and confronted my father and said, here's what we're doing. Right? We're either going to have healing, we're either going to get help and have healing, or I'm going to do this alone, right? Without you, and you won't have grandchildren in your life. And, you know, myself being in a vulnerable place in a way, like I didn't know what to do, even though I was, you know, an adult, it was still scary for me. The very next day we were in therapy, my father got everything handled, got us into therapy separately, you know.
That's profound.
And to just go, all right, we're doing this. And then we ended up, there was a program here in the Bay Area called Parents United, where they bring together, you get individual therapy, group therapy, and everyone in the family is involved. Everyone needs to participate. The person who was the parent, the mother, usually it's the father who had done, you know, perpetrated the abuse, and the kids, siblings, everybody, and anyone who's impacted by it can come to this. And so that's where I started my journey, where it was like sitting in this circle with everybody involved with the with abuse and the impact of abuse, and then having my own individual therapy. But and that was me knowing about the abuse my whole life, but just taking the step, you know, taking the step to confront my father, and then going, okay, therapy, what's the next thing? Getting help, getting support. And I hear you saying that is what happened for you too.
Yeah, I mean, how alone did I feel?
Yeah.
I mean, there was nobody to talk to. And that's why I brought up Slaw, because that was the only room that I could go into and I could share about how I was dealing with the devastating effects of this. And people just held space for me quietly. It was a place to like say it out loud. But there really wasn't anybody else to have that conversation with. My mom, you know, I just didn't even know how to even tell her. I mean, I just didn't even know. It took a year or more. And so going to get a therapist and sitting in with her every week and just being like crying, basically just crying. I mean, I just shed, you know, for so long. I mean, I went in there in so many different states of being. That for me was the most helpful place. I did try, and I talk about this in the book, I did try to go to, I think it's SIA, Sexual Incest Anonymous, or it's one of those. I did go to one of those meetings, just one, and I didn't connect with the message. I felt that, and this might have just been that meeting. It's not necessarily all meetings, because they could be very good for certain people. But for me, it seemed like people were sitting in the problem, not the solution. And I knew from very early on, I wanted to get to the solution, not sit in the problem. That was my goal from the very almost.
Wonderful.
That's why I got into therapy so fast, is I'm like, we're going to, my first version of this book was called Kicking Abuse in the Ass.
I love it.
Okay. That was my plan. Okay.
But you know what you're, I love it. You did it. So I love what you say about sitting in the solution and not the problem. And where, what I write about in my book is around taking radical responsibility for the future that you want to create. You
That's
know,
beautiful.
You can spend, and I, you know, your whole life in the victimization of what happened to you, right? I could definitely, and it would make sense. You know, this happened to me. You did this to me. It would make sense if I spent my whole life in victimization. I was hurt badly, right? I was betrayed. And so, yes, that's true, but it doesn't change anything. It doesn't do anything for my life. It doesn't give me anything of joy that I want to say, oh yeah, my life is about this. My life is about being abused. No, my life is about the resilience of the human spirit. My life is about, you know, taking responsibility for creating something beautiful out of something that was really hard, right? And so then take radical responsibility for the future you want to create. Then from there, you can include, you know, it's not like, oh, the abuse never happened. No, I have to include that as part of my experience and part of who I am today, right? And letting it inform what I care about in the world, which is getting out of denial.
Getting out of denial. I am profoundly, and I was feeling it while you were speaking, you know, I was feeling emotional. I am profoundly grateful for everything that's happened in my life.
Oh.
Profoundly grateful for the journey that I've been on.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't change a single thing.
I can say that now,
but I still think that's just hope for someone to know that at a certain point, the details, right? The details are less important than the compassion. Now, it's easy for me to be compassionate. My dad's dead. So I will never know if I will be, but I do know I speak to his spirit. I have had conversations with my dad through open eye meditation. I have had my dad come into my conscious spirit, and I have had conversations with him. I have forgiven him, and I do feel that he is there with me in spirit in a way he couldn't be with me in the physical body. I believe his physical body was, I feel that he was a ill man, and I feel like he was made ill by a pattern of abuse that went through, I think, both sides of my family, my dad's side and my mom's side. Again, I can't verify that, but I just feel it in my spirit. So for me to collectively hold space for the brokenness of my ancestors, and then to be able to be profoundly grateful for the life in which I live, is healing.
Absolutely. And this is you're actually the first person that around sexual abuse that I've heard say those words. And I'm grateful for everything that happened to me. I know that there are more out there, but and I love how you're connecting this to giving hope to people on the journey, maybe that they're just starting the journey, because I didn't feel grateful for anything that happened to me at the beginning either. And so I look at today, when I look back on my life, I experienced, clinical depression. I talk about that in the last episode of this series of the podcast. I've I experienced deep loss and disappointment, and most importantly, and the abandonment from my mother, and the abuse from my father. I wouldn't be who I was today without those things happening. And the way that I can be grateful is to be out of the victimization, like we talked earlier. The more I get out of the victimization of what happened to me, the more that I can allow something else, something more beautiful to happen through me. And that's the contribution. So I kind of want to give this, a little bit more airtime with the hope of anyone for anyone who's listening that, if you're at the beginning stages, or you're just that inkling of maybe this happened to me, or you've known about it, but you haven't wanted to come forward. You don't have to be grateful for anything that happened to you right now, but the hope is, and I think we both want to give people, is that at some point you can turn your wound. Joseph Campbell, the hero's journey, where your wound lies, there, where your wound is, there lies your greatest gift. And so that's the hope, but you don't have to go there. You ha just be right where you're at on the journey. And if the first step is to get help, hire a therapist, talk to somebody, tell a friend, talk to your golden retriever, take the first step and know that you're going to be held in your next step.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that those feelings and those experiences change. I mean, for me, writing the book and being of service and being able to come on this podcast and go on other podcasts and say the word sexual abuse, which is still such a taboo. When you want to go become a speaker and have a platform and you want to include in your bio that you wrote this book, when people ask me, well, oh, you wrote a book, oh, you're an author, or you wrote a book, and I say no longer denying sexual abuse, you see them try to keep the smile on their face, like, oh, good, yay. That sounds great. It's like, does it? I mean, I don't know. I mean, does it really sound great? I'm grateful that my next book actually doesn't have that title, so I can start saying it to a broader audience. But it's a service that I have committed to do. And when we have the tools of writing and we can write, then we can get out the message.
Yes, let's talk about that a little bit, because you're also a book coach. And so you help people bring their stories out, you guide them through that process, and we've talked about that a little bit. So if somebody has, is ready to start writing their story, or what stage would they is it what stage is the right stage to start writing your journey, your story, would you say?
I mean, I've helped a couple different people who have written books about sexual abuse being a piece of why they led X life, right? And you know, they, those books have been incredible journeys for them. But that said, it will, you know, take your breath away sometimes. Writing about your abuse, you really like, even without graphic details. I mean, it could be just one detail. And often it is just one detail for people. Sometimes some people, I mean, many people have just been abused just once. I mean, there's, you know, repetitive abuse, and then there's just one time. It doesn't matter, one or 20, it all has.
Yeah,
the impact.
We don't want to, like compare it, right?
It takes just once. I mean, it takes just once and forget it. And so, you know, I always say to people, I worked with this one client a long, long time ago who was writing a book not about anything related to abuse at all. It was like a memoir. And she wrote something, and I said, wait a minute, back up a minute. That's odd.
Oh,
I didn't even think about
right.
What I, you know, I was just like, that's odd. And she went, oh, that is odd. She actually got sick, physically sick for weeks.
So you were to her what your dad's girlfriend was to you in bringing it forward by you.
Yeah.
You named something in the space.
Yes.
That you saw. You know, when I've done a little bit of research on denial with kids and why they, you know, like not tell and stuff. And, you know, the reasons why kids don't tell or don't say something. And it's, you know, sometimes it's our own, the adult's discomfort with the topic, with the subject matter. Like we might see something, but then we're in denial. So we might say, oh, did anything happen? What does anything mean? Like we don't, and then not take the next step, not really, you know, something's going on, but you just, you know, you just don't want to know what's happening to your kid, or you don't want to know what's happening, you know, to that youngster. And so
I grew up with a lot of what's wrong with you. Why are you so angry? Why are you so mad? Why are you so mean? Why are you so unkind? Why can't you just behave? Why do you have such anger issues? Why are you this? No one really wanted to. I remember going to see like a child psychiatrist or a psychologist or whatever it was, and just hating him, just being like, you're an idiot. And just like, nobody, you know, nobody understands me. Nobody wants to know. I remember going on being sent away to like Martha's Vineyard with my aunt and her and my uncle and my aunt. And I just remember feeling like them saying, you know, why have you been sent here? Like, what's wrong with you? I didn't tell anybody.
Right. I had my experience growing up was, like my mom knew something was going on. And so she would question me, but it was felt like battering me, you know, what's wrong? What's going on? What's wrong with what's happening? Why are you, I became sullen. I became withdrawn, spent more time in my room. And so I remember a time when my mom came into my bedroom and she brought my father with her.
Whoa.
And he sat on the chair, just looking at me, and my mom questioning me, what's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? We're worried about you. We're worried about you. We're worried. And I didn't know how to say, I mean, I'm just like frozen. I have nothing to say in this experience right here.
That's intense.
It was intense. It was really intense. But I, you know, here she is trying to bring something forward, and never occurred to her that it was my dad that was actually harming me.
Wow.
And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say. The shame and the responsibility for my family. I mean, I didn't even have words for it at that time.
Right.
But I
right.
felt the responsibility for what wasn't mine. You know, we talked about taking responsibility, but often when we've been abused, I think a common experience is to take responsibility for what isn't ours. Right. So I have all the responsibility for my family staying together, or for my dad getting in trouble. I'm now responsible for what he did to me instead of him being responsible for what he did to
100%.
me.
100%. I know that so well. You're going to break up the family.
Oh, my
You're
God.
You're going to split up your parents' marriage.
It's all
you know,
fault.
and then there's the piece of like, I don't have any proof that my dad was a philanderer, but there was some evidence a couple times, and I was a witness sort of to it adjacently. And then I tried to defend him when my mother sort of accused him. Meanwhile, we're thinking we're actually the ones that they're philandering with in some weird kind of way. And like, that's our secret. And yet we're watching them do adult things, and yet we're a child, and we're not allowed in that conversation. It's very, very confusing.
Very, very confusing. I think that's one of the things that we need in our society to shift in our society is to have some kind of a framework or some kind of a way to inquire about abuse when we see something with kids or even, and I started thinking about this in creating a course or something for, you know, because I went to therapy before I started having kids. So now, but I didn't know what to look for in my own kids, right? I'm wondering what it would be like to have that information before people have kids is what to look for, what to be aware of, you know, and how to talk about it, how to talk about it with your kids, how to, you know, so that you're not scaring the daylights out of them, but you're arming them with the capacity at a very young age to speak up, to speak their truth. And you know, so I'm kind of, you know, swimming around in curiosity around how to create something like that for
Well,
people.
there is something called voicesinaction.org, and it's called privately documented incidents. And you can document an incident without reporting anything to the authorities. And it's a way to document and timestamp an incident so that it becomes something that you actually can, not feel like, oh, maybe that was just a one-off thing, and you find yourself start going back in there and doing it a couple times. I write in the book about a date rape that I, so what happens is when we're in denial and we don't face what's going on, we often then are susceptible to more forms of abuse. I see this over and over and over and over again, and was date raped by this particular person that I write about in the book, and didn't even face that until I faced, everything. And I almost went and documented him in this incident, but I ended up contacting him and kind of telling him, and of course he denied it. But I did say, if I ever find out, or if I ever hear any reports from that you are, because he was in a position where he was going to counsel young women, I said, I will take you to the mat.
Sometimes you, and that's your adult self showing up right
That's my
there.
adult self going, you know what, buddy? That is not okay.
That's
I'm
not
protecting. Yeah.
okay. That's not okay. All right. Well, you know, we're kind of in, towards the end of our time together here today. But what message would you like if you had one message to leave people today, what would that be? What would you say?
I would say that if you're in the process of coming out of the denial, the journey of your new life and your new original self has just begun. The person that you were, many parts of that person will stay with you where you go, but you're going to start seeing just such different versions and variations of yourself. It's going to be like a new you is going to emerge, and it's pretty incredible.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, I am looking forward. First, I want to thank you for being here and having this courageous.
Thank you for having me.
And I'm looking forward to spending more time with you, investing more time with you, and getting to know you and your story more. And how can people find you if they want to buy your book or maybe get your help writing their own book?
Sure, the book is on, Amazon, but I like to send people to bookshop.org because that's where independent bookstores are, making the book available. I like to support the independent bookstores. You can reach me at kimohara.com. That's my book coaching website, and I also have a column on Substack. I give you permission.substack.com, and that is a great place to see what I write about every single week. Please be a subscriber and listen. If you know anybody that has even thought of that they've been abused or struggling, buy them a copy of the book and just put it in their hands, because you never know. You just never know what people need to heal.
Well, and I work with people who have gone through this, and you And so this your book is going to be on my resource page for sure. I'm going to be sharing this
Thank
with
you.
my audience. And so really
And
good.
I do want to say that the no longer denying sexual abuse, .com is the 21 session series, and that is free. And that goes through
Oh, wow.
every chapter of the book. It's a teaching modules. They're teaching modules, and I teach with another woman from her book as well. So that is something, if even if you sign up and you give your email, it's not going to be seen by anybody. It's
Okay.
completely private.
Good, good, good. Thank you so much. We will I'll have all that information available to people. So to all the courageous listeners out there, today's conversation is really a reminder that you're not alone on this journey. Acknowledging the truth of one's experience is a monumental step towards healing. And if you find yourself ready to talk to someone to step out of denial and into your own truth, then I really want to encourage you to reach out. Help is available and it's okay to ask for it. So remember, it takes immense strength to face our past, but in doing so, we open the door to a future filled with hope and freedom. So thank you for joining me today on Courageous Conversations with Leila Reyes. Until next time, keep the conversation going and never underestimate the power of speaking your truth. Thank you for joining me on this episode of From Trauma to True Love. I honor your courage for being here, taking steps towards the love and connection that you truly desire. I've been there too, stuck in painful patterns, longing for love but unsure how to create it in a way that felt safe, real, and lasting. You don't have to figure it all out on your own. If you're ready to explore what's been holding you back and discover what's truly possible for your relationships, I would love to support you. Visit Leila Reyes, LeilaReyes, Leila Reyes, and schedule a call today. We'll take the first step together toward the deep, meaningful love that you were born to have. I can't wait to connect with you. Until next time, take good care of yourself and know that real, lasting love is within your reach.